Good afternoon, Los Angeles and all of Southern California. I'm Farley Malaris, and you're listening to Astrological Metaphysical Radio, the phenomenon of the 80s. K-Fox, 93.5 FM in Redondo Beach. Hi, SoCal. Welcome to another edition of the Astrology Hour. We've been talking about the ascendant all this week, the rising sign, the personality, and the self-awareness and such. We are going to move further now and get exactly opposite the ascendant to descendant, the opposite side of the wheel on the far right side of the wheel. The descendant is of critical importance because whereas we are shaped and we are molded in our environment, it allows us to discover who we are. Literally, we find out how we see the world and how we deal with the world, how we handle relationships by analyzation of the descendant, D-E-S-C-E-N-D-A-N-T. So, a very vital and critical topic as far as understanding relationships are concerned for today's show. We're going to focus on karma of the self concerning relationships, on overall love vibration, on actually overall capabilities concerning whether or not we are even capable of a commitment, and we're also going to take a look at what types of people we might magnify towards or radiate to. As far as overall energies that we would get along with most compatibly in a relationship, what would keep up our attention and such. The first house has been fun to analyze. If you've caught the last two shows, part one and part two of Defining the Personality, we were really on a quest for self-realization, and I really didn't focus enough on childhood influences that go on, because that first house in total sum analysis really does spend a lot of time as far as understanding what exactly did go on in the childhood. On the other hand, if you want to find the descendant and the seventh house, which is the house just opposite the slice of pie which the first house is, and if you've been listening to the show this week, you'll note that the first house is located on a wheel, on the chart wheel, where the 9 would be on the clock face is where it starts, and it continues to the 8. Okay, so that is slice of pie that is first house. The seventh house exactly opposite begins right where the 3 on the clock face would begin and would continue all the way up to the 2. Now, the interesting part of the seventh house is that you have to remember that the rising is such a powerful energy because we're talking about the direction in which this planet is spinning, and that's towards the east, okay? And that is a very, very powerful energy, the energy that is rising or surfacing to the city from where we are born. But at the same time, the energy that is leaving, the visible vibration of that city, or what is ever setting or falling, is what is very, very critical, as far as relationships are concerned. Whereas the rising focuses on self-development in any natal chart, the falling or the setting sign would focus on how we deal with relationships, karma and people, love, marriage, and partners, and how we deal with the world. So, whereas many people might see us as a Libra, if we were Libra rising as far as personality, they might see us as an Aries as far as how we handle relationships, because Aries would be the falling sign. See, if you're Scorpio rising, then people would see you personality-wise as a Scorpio. But because the sign opposite Scorpio is Taurus, you have Taurus falling or descending and are setting in your chart. So people in the personality aspect, as far as the rising sign, that's the way you come across on a one-to-one basis. But when they get to know you and they get a little closer to you, then they see you the opposite way. Isn't it funny? So many times when we get to know people, after a while, we don't like them as much, because on the surface, we plug into their ascendant, and then as we get close to them and start to love them, we fall into their descendant. That is why, being Libra rising and having Aries on the seventh house cusp is exactly opposite to the natural setup. The natural rising wheel is Aries in the first house and Libra in the seventh. So Libra risings are kind of backwards. people see us as relationship oriented in our personalities. And then when it comes to relationships, we have Aries, the sign of self, on relationships. So a lot of Libra risings tend to be selfish for that reason. See what I mean? So we can focus on how people see us in relationships, depending on what is setting in the chart, what the falling, what the descending sign is. Now, if you have questions about your descendant and any planets that might be in that seventh house, okay, there's a lot of things to take into account when analyzing relationships in the natal chart or how we deal with people because of the location of the falling sign or the descendant. Number one, what is the energy on the cusp of that descendant? That's what's important. And, you know, the energy on the cusp of the descendant or the cusp of the seventh house is always the exact opposite point of the rising sign. So if you're 5 Pisces rising, then your falling or your descendant is going to be exactly opposite Pisces, which is Virgo. So people are going to see you personality-wise as a Pisces. You're going to come across as a Pisces, but when they get close to you, you will become the Virgo in relationships. That's why a lot of Pisces risings are confused with relationships, because they go back and forth from being Pisces, which is mellow, to Virgo, which is intense. See what I mean? Same with Scorpio rising. You know, Scorpio risings can come across very soft and sensitive and compassionate with their personalities, and then they have Taurus and the descendant, and right away when they're strong lovers and they're jealous and dominant and bossy, sometimes arrogant lovers like a Taurus. See, and Sag risings are very interesting, because they come across all warm and sweet and loving and affectionate in their personalities, and then we go to their relationships, and they're Gemini. You know, they don't know what they want in relationships. They want to talk is what they want to do oftentimes. So, you know, we do find out a lot by understanding one's descendant sign. And isn't it funny that so many people are concerned with being compatible with the ascendant, that not as many people are as concerned with how compatible they are with the descendant. You know, I would like to make it in the school of astrology that there are 4 majors. Your sun, moon, rising, and falling. You know, what? I'm a Leo sun, Scorpio moon, Libra rising, Aries descendant. You know, and that is important, you know, because people don't pay attention to that, and that's why so many times they get in trouble in relationships. Well, what about the karma that goes on? You know, like what type of price do we have to pay when it comes to relationships? And what do we have to go through to form one or to shape one? Are we meant to even have one? Is there marriage or partnership in my future? Am I subject to having a secure love or a soulmate or a twin flame? You know, a lot of these questions are answered by analysis of the descendant and the seventh house activities that are going on in there. Obviously, not near as many people have planets in the seventh house as they do in the first, you know, because most of us prefer being babies karmically than prefer being obsessed with others. But seventh house planets, what they do, if you are born with planets in the seventh house, is they actually exchange the priorities from the self to needing other people, okay? In other words, the self is somehow balanced by the acceptance or the admittance or the interchange with others. So whereas people with planets in the first house more need to learn how to be alone and love it, people with planets in the seventh house have a life lesson of needing to focus on people and enjoy it. Okay, because a lot of people with seventh house planets will martyr themselves by getting obsessed with relationships and creating the wrong vehicles just because it's a quote-unquote relationship. There's a very, very strong Libran force at hand with those people that have planets in their natal chart in the seventh house, which means that you can be extremely charming, even more than you want to be, extremely manipulative. You can also seek relationships for the wrong motive, not really understand why you want love or marriage, but create it. Then when it's there after a while, say, why have I done this? Or is this what I really wanted? See, because seventh house planet people are people that are always attracting relationships, which means even if you're married, that energy is not going to stop. You know, if you're married, you're going to still be looking around because you are a relationship-oriented creature with planets in the seventh house. See what I mean? So these planets strongly imitate Libra energy, which says, I need to relate. Even if I'm married, I need to relate. Now, obviously, if you have a planet like Saturn in the seventh house, which is your major karma in life, which would be love, marriage, relationships, and partners, or Uranus in the seventh house, natally, which is the planet of divorce and breakup and violent or sudden changes, right? Or Neptune in the seventh house, which is the planet of delusions and illusions, and oftentimes you know, delusions of grandeur and stuff are being the perfectionist. These are not well placed. You know, like before you get married to someone that has Saturn, Uranus, or Neptune, or right now all of the above, let's say if a baby's Cancer rising, they're going to be born with Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune in the seventh, which is not really a proper vehicle for balance, because these people are born to experiment and learn from relationships. It doesn't really mean that they're supposed to adhere to a permanent commitment unless they are into masochism and sadism in their relationships. Because seventh house Saturns are people that end up getting themselves in trouble, usually creating the wrong vehicles for people they love. Seventh house Uranuses need tremendous variety in relationships. If they don't have it with one person, they'll create more. And seventh house Neptunes are perfectionists. They're idealists. You know, it goes on and on. A seventh house Mercury is going to totally analyze relationships from God knows from here to forever. And a seventh house Sun is going to be focused on relationships, can't live without them, birth to death with relationships and love, right? Seventh house Moon, give me a break. You know, totally heartsick and milksop as far as relationships are concerned. And you might have a seventh house Venus. Well, this does a little better. Seventh house Venus does a little better as long as it's a little more better aspected. I don't mind it much. If a person has a seventh house planet and they have sextiles and trines on it, no matter what planet it is, that does exude more balance and more grounding for love, life, and compatibility. But very rarely do we find people with seventh house planets plus unafflicted. Usually seventh house planets do carry an opposition or a square or an inconjunct on them, which will create a magnificent, incredible need for torture sometimes in order to grow, and we'll find the most incredible growth possible with people experiencing the hardest relationships when they have afflicted seventh house planets. Now, you know, typically in love, if you want to know how your love life is going and you like women, then we always look to the natal Venus in the chart, what sign it's in as far as what types of women that you're going to like, what house it's in as far as what those women do with their lives, how it's aspected as far as the challenges or the emotional securities or insecurities attached to that woman, you know. And same with Mars. You know, Mars will tell us what type of men that we will be attracted to in relationships. Like Mars and Aries, a woman is going to like a good-looking guy because Aries rules the face and the body and the head and the self. You know, Mars and Gemini is going to be more usually interested in the mind, in the brain. And Mars and Scorpio, obviously, in the sex appeal and the intensity and the mystique and the mysteriousness that surrounds the person. See, so you take the sign vibration and you take the planetary meaning and combine it to find out really what types of people you will be more susceptible to adapt yourself to. So Venus and Mars truly are planets that I use to understand relationships in a focus. But if you have planets in the seventh house natally, or you know someone that does, then you better believe that there's like a double focus on relationships, because we all have a Venus and Mars. If you have planets in the seventh house, you are dealing with a person here who was born to take relationships as a major course of study, a major course of graduation. This is like the major subject in college you're going to graduate from. My pal Monica, who has a beautiful Sag rising Gemini sun. I believe she has three or four planets of stellium in Gemini in the seventh house. This is a woman that was meant to live her life to truly understand relationships, perhaps from an extremely objective point of view, but at least that's what she's here for, to understand that stuff. When you have planets in that seventh house, that's the focus, understanding people and how they tick. So anyway, you know, we go back to the seventh house, and there's all kinds of things we look at the seventh house as far as relationships are concerned, you know, because if a person has a Virgo descendant or a, let's say, something weird like a maybe Cancer descendant, okay, how's that? Well, this person is going, you know, Capricorn rising people typically are tough and typically are very grounded, but they have Cancer, the most sensitive of the signs, on the descendant, which means they're tough on the surface when you meet them, but when it comes to relationships, they're wimps. They are wimps. They are softies. See, so that Cancer descendant puts focus on that. But you have to add all the variables, just like when we analyze the rising sign and try to develop character and understand character. To understand someone's focus on relationships, you have to include every possible factor involved. Which means, what planets are in that seventh house? Well, if a person's got a descendant, a seventh house cusp that is, let's say, Sagittarius, and they have Mercury and the Sun and Saturn in that seventh house, then that means as far as relationships are concerned, number one, they're Gemini rising, so on the surface they're very talkative and friendly and communicative, but they have Sag in the descendant. They have the sign of freedom. And a sign of fun and laughing and optimism and philosophy on the cusp of relationships. So relationships are going to be very philosophical to them and very friendly and fun, or they're gone. Because the freedom is a focus for them. Now, if they have Sun, Mercury, and Saturn in that house too, we're going to add a Leo factor there, because their Sun's in the seventh, so they're going to be very Leo 9. Dignity's going to be involved, honor, pride, also creativity and romance, maybe a father figure, whether it's a man or a woman they seek. That Sun is there, so they want a father figure, right? So, and they may also be very stubborn, even though the descendant is Sagittarius. The Sun is there, the most stubborn planet, the Leo Lord. So they may be like a Leo, or very arrogant in relationships and freedom loving, no matter how it's aspected, right? Then if Mercury is there on top of that, then we add a Gemini and a Virgo quality to how they handle relationships. Oh, they think about it, they analyze it, they're detectives about it, they're troubleshooters. They'll drive you nuts. Talk, 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 bicker, 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 right? And then on top of that, here's Saturn. So we add a Capricorn factor. Don't you see it? The cusp is Sag. The Sun's in there. We got Leo. Mercury's in there. Virgo and Gemini. And then here comes Saturn. We got a Capricorn. So this person's a split personality when it comes to dealing with relationships. And if they have just one single square or one single opposition on any of those planets, we are talking required trauma necessary in relationships, usually emotionally with squares and physically with opposition. So when you hang with people with seventh house planets, look out, because you're going to get a very unique type of beast in the relationship. And oftentimes if there's squares and oppositions there, then that means that they need a battle. They enjoy that battle. They enjoy that diversity. They enjoy that emotional exchange that you might not be used to. And what happens if two people get together that have an assortment, a conglomerate of planets in the seventh house? Well, we could have a karmic circus here going on. It gets complicated. You know, somebody has a descendant in Libra, and they're Aries rising, and they have Pluto in that seventh house in Libra. Well, they're going to be on the surface very Libran quality, very nice and balanced and gushy and puppy and all that with their relationships, but Pluto's there. So there's the intensity of Scorpio added to that. Even though it's in Libra, Pluto is the Scorpio Lord, so we include Scorpio factors in how this person will deal with relationships. You know, and you have to understand there's a lot of things that we take into account when we look at the descendant and how we will deal with relationships. Number one, we want to know are there planets in the first house? Are there planets in the seventh house? If there are, what are they and how are they aspected? And if they're well aspected, this means more balance, more activity in the house of love and partners. If they're not aspected well, then that means karma in the house of love and romance and partners. And does that mean I shouldn't go partnership, Farley? Well, I don't know about you. I'm an astrologer. If I have seventh house planets under affliction, it's going to be darn impossible to avoid partnerships. But I'm not going to say it's not going to be bad for you, because it's karmic. And when it's karmic, sometimes you suffer. That's the way it goes, you know. You have to suffer to grow when it comes to working out your karma. You have to let go of something. You got to say goodbye to something and somebody. Otherwise, it'll waste you. It'll waste you down. So number one, are there planets in the first house? How are they aspected natally? Number two, how are they being transited? That's right, because you could have beautifully aspected planets in that seventh house with trines and sextiles and be happily married or have tremendous balance in your love life for many years, then all of a sudden Saturn will come around and square or oppose those planets, and bingo, karma strikes. So you are not by any means safe just because you have a blessed seventh house when you're born. No way. Because the moon will square and oppose that puppy four times a month, and the sun will square and oppose it four times a year, and you're liable to run into a long transit from Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, or Pluto square or opposed it, and that always means the trash has to be dumped. That's why I never, ever tell anyone to get too hooked into any one situation in their lives, because the way the astrological cycle works, it brings things to us and it takes it away, and it brings things to us and it takes it away. All things must pass. All things must pass. That's the law. That's the way it works. Even you one day will pass. Even you too will pass. And that's the way it works. Other things you have to take into account is, what if you don't have any planets in that seventh house? Aha! You think you're going to escape the karma of love and relationships? No way. No way you're going to escape that. You have to find the Lord of that seventh house. That is the controlling planet. How that planet is aspected natally and how that planet is aspected in the transits will tell you about your natal karma with love and marriage and partners, and your transit karma are your current effect with love and marriage and partners and relationships. So nobody rides for free in this topic or in astrology. If your house doesn't have a planet in it, you don't escape. You still have karma with that house. Your Pisces rising, you have Virgo in the descendant. What planet rules Virgo? Mercury. So Mercury controls everything that goes on in your love life. Isn't that weird? That's the way it works. Your Taurus rising, you have Scorpio in the descendant. You have no planets in Scorpio. So we look to Pluto. Pluto is Lord of Scorpio. That controls everything that goes on in that seventh house. If you have squares and oppositions on your Pluto, maybe now you know why you can't hold a relationship. You're too intense. You're too emotional. You're too much of an extremist. You're too Scorpion when it comes with relationships. You overdo it. See, the astrological signs all have balance. And where the karma comes in and where things get screwed up and people get freaked out and run away is when the energy of any particular sign goes on extreme. You know, Scorpio vibration is nice, it is pleasant, until it goes on extreme. And if you're Taurus rising with a Scorpio seventh house, right, and you have Pluto in Leo and it's square Mars in Taurus, then when it comes to Scorpio factor, you're intense. When it comes to relationships, you've overdone it. You've overblown the emotion. And that's why when you get involved in relationships and people feel that Mars square Pluto, they run. They go, my God, I can't put up with this. This is crazy. This is weird. It's intense. It's nuts. You know, so if you understand astrology and you understand that karma, then maybe you'll learn to process this part of your behavior and stop taking your relationship so personal. Some people get involved in relationships, it's like Fatal Attraction or Play Misty for me. Give me a break. You know, relationships are meant to be light and breezy and fun and cheery and happy and voluptuous and loving and sharing and caring, not weird and hurtful and painful and emotional and aggressive. And if you think they're supposed to be weird, then maybe you come from the wrong planet. I do, but I don't think they need to be like that. Okay, so the descendant is the cusp of the seventh house. And the seventh house is the activity of the energies as far as how we deal with the world. Whereas the first house and the rising sign control the self in our relationship with ourself. The house opposite and the sign opposite are the falling sign, and the seventh house is how we deal with the world, how we handle people. That's what it's about. And if you have planets in that house, there's focus on the karma. And if you have planets going into that house during a transit, there's current focus of the karma. If Mars is going into your seventh house, which means there's going to be a focus on karma concerning love, romance, relationships, partners, and marriage. You're there. Saturn 7, karma and relationships, is happening next 2.5 years. You're there. If you're Cancer rising, you're there. Saturn's in the seventh for you. So that's how it works. And like I say, if you have no planets in the seventh house, you're not home free. You have a planetary lord. And if your descendant is Aries, Mars is that planetary lord. And like mine, my descendant's Aries, so Mars rules my relationships. And if your descendant is Taurus, that means your Scorpio rising, descendant Taurus, then Venus is the planetary lord of that house. And if your descendant Gemini, then that means that Sag is your rising, then Gemini is your descendant. Mercury also is the lord of your seventh house. Your descendant would be Cancer, that's Capricorn rising. Then Moon would control your seventh house. Your descendant is Leo, that's Aquarius rising. Sun would control everything in your seventh house. Excuse me. If you have a Virgo descendant, that's Pisces rising, like Mercury would control that seventh house. That's lord of Virgo. If you're Libra descendant, that's Aries rising, then Venus would control your seventh house matters. If you're Scorpio descendant, that's Taurus rising, and that means that Pluto would control the seventh house matters. And if you're Sag descendant, that's Gemini rising, Jupiter is the lord of the seventh. And if you're Capricorn descendant, that's Cancer rising, Saturn controls the descendant and seventh house matters. Pretty karmic to be Cancer rising, right? Right. Capricorn on the seventh house, normal. That means the karma sign is on the house of relationships. You got it. And then Aquarius descendant is Leo rising, and Uranus is the lord of relationships for you. And then Pisces descendant would be Virgo rising, and Neptune would be lord of your relationships. And good luck if you're Virgo rising with a Pisces descendant, right? It sounds like a tough gig. It is. Some interesting topics this week on the rising and the falling sign in the natal chart, critical topics to understand astrology. And congratulations to those of you that have your charts so you can study along with us in these vital topics. The show is a classroom, of course.